Matthew's Gospel, chapter 28. On the morning of August the 27th, 1883, the most stupendous explosion ever recorded took place. It was heard as far as 3,000 miles from its source. The whole of the northern and lower part of the island of Krakatoa, between Java and Sumatra, had simply blown off. Stones and dust and ashes shot up 17 miles into the atmosphere above the earth. Forests became totally buried under the debris. 150 miles away, the sky went dark and they had to use lamps at midday. The tidal waves reached as far as Cape Horn, nearly 8,000 miles away. Across the world, the weather and the sunsets were dramatically affected for many months to come. Krakatoa is about the nearest I can get to as a physical parallel to the spiritual explosion caused within our world by the bodily resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. The greatest difference, of course, being that while Krakatoa was destructive, Easter caused the greatest shock wave of hope and confidence that the world has ever known. And its tidal waves haven't ceased to be felt on all five continents right up to today, 2,000 years later. To quote David Gooding, "The resurrection of Christ has altered the face of the universe. Not only is death not an irreversible process, it is not even a permanent institution." So talk about shock waves when we think of Easter. Let's look at verse 8 of our passage here in Matthew 28. "So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy." Of course, they were shaken. So much had happened. Apart from anything else, there had been two earthquakes within 36 hours. Matthew is careful to record them. One as Jesus died in Matthew 27, verse 50 onwards, where as the earthquake takes place, so it records that the great curtain in the temple that separated the holy place from the holy of holies was ripped into from top to bottom, thus opening up the symbolized presence of God to all who had belief in Christ. And then also the underworld of the dead was violently disturbed as the graves of Jerusalem were opened, and some of those bodies of the holy saints who were in their graves began to appear in Jerusalem, thus indicating the massive difference that Christ's death made to the whole world of the dead at that time of the earthquake. And then also, at the occasion of his resurrection, another earthquake. Chapter 28 here, verse 2. "As the lightning-like angel brushes aside with contemptuous ease all those elaborate precautions taken by the enemy of Christ, who had tried so hard to make the tomb sealed, secure, and guarded against all interference, in a flash, guards are flattened. The stone moved away from the tomb. The way cleared for the coming of the women who would be the first witnesses of the resurrected Christ. You can't stop Jesus." That's what I learned from this passage. Indeed, as that John Wesley hymn we began with, which in the verse 2 got that little misprint there. "Christ has burst the gates of hell," is what we were faced with there. Well, he did. That's what he did. He burst the gates of hell that were against him. Now, friends, I don't think we should be at all puzzled at the little differences of reporting by the four gospel writers. After all, if all four gospel writers told the story in exact way, the exact similar terms, we wouldn't need four gospels. We'd only have one. But no, we have four gospels. So, one angel in Matthew, but two feature in Luke and John. Presumably Matthew is concentrating on the angel who is speaking. And the time of day when all this happened? At dawn, says Matthew here in verse 1. Just after sunrise, says Mark. very early in the morning, says Luke, while it was still dark, says John. Well, one should be grateful that there are sometimes different, several versions of the same event, because through the different perspectives and from the different standpoints that each observer has, they fill out the picture for us. The same actually at the Battle of Waterloo all those years ago. Two entire armies of spectators and participants were involved, and it depended on where you were standing, where you were situated on the battlefield as to how you saw the battle. Who could even tell when the Battle of Waterloo began? The Duke of Wellington said it began at 10 o'clock in the morning. No, said General Alara, it began at 11:30, and he wrote beside him. It began at 12, actually, says Napoleon and Drouet. No, says General Ney, it began at 1. Well, who's to say that any one of those were wrong? Depends upon the standpoint, just where they were, what they were seeing at that particular moment. In point of fact, friends, you only need a pencil and paper, and perhaps about 30 minutes, and all four accounts of the first Easter are totally reconcilable and consistent with each other. Oh, I know some of the liberal teachers teach otherwise, but I think they're wrong. Sure they're wrong. Of course it was a day of breathless excitement and of frantic running as well. Evidently one party, as it ran, just missing the other party who were coming in the opposite direction, rather like a Victorian farce. It was that kind of disorientated day. So don't take notes at this point, but you can always take it down from the recording of this message. The order of events was something like this. Early on Sunday, the resurrection of Jesus takes place. It's marked by an earthquake. An angel descends and rolls away the stone from the tomb. That's Matthew 28, verses 2 to 4 here. And the demoralized soldiers disperse into the city. Matthew 28, 11. Later to the tomb comes Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and then Mark adds, and Salome. Another group of women follow with the spices. It's Mary Magdalene who arrives first at the tomb, John 20, verses 1 and 2. She sees that the tomb is open, and she immediately rushes to inform Peter and John. The other Mary and Salome, on reaching the tomb, see the angel, Matthew 28, 5, and are told to tell the news to the disciples. They go. Then the other women, including Joanna, approach. They see two angelic figures and are reminded by them that Jesus had predicted his own resurrection. That's Luke 24, 1-7. Meanwhile, Mary Magdalene has alerted Peter and John, and they set off for the tomb, John 20, 3 and 4, running, with Mary following behind. By the time Mary herself has arrived, Peter and John have already been into the tomb and have gone, John 20, verse 10. But Mary stays, weeping, at the tomb, John 20, verse 11. Then she sees the two angels who ask her why she weeps. It's then that she has her encounter with the risen Lord, John 20, verse 14. While this is happening, the other women have seen the rest of the disciples and told them of the events, which are regarded by them as an idle tale, Luke 24, 11. It's probably them, on their way back to the tomb, that Jesus meets them on the way, Matthew 28, verse 9, and they worship him. Sometime later that day, the risen Christ meets with Peter alone, Luke 24, 34, and 1 Corinthians 15, verse 5. He also meets with the two travelers to Emmaus, Luke 24, and then later still with the entire group of the disciples, except Thomas, Luke 24 and John 20. That's roughly what happened. It was a bewildering day. Hence the emphasis of our message today, they were afraid yet filled with joy. Totally bewildered. They were staggering under the news. The message is, you can't stop Jesus. Or you can try. Many people have tried. Many people are trying now. See, here, everything seemed over during the Saturday of that weekend. The troublemaker was dead. The tomb was sealed. The guard was posted. Christ's followers were scattered. The movement was over, and the chief priests can go to bed. Then at some point, early on Sunday morning, bam! The earthquake. The angel. The guards are flattened. The tomb is empty. The stone is rolled back, and shining angels have converted the tomb into a pulpit. He is not here, verse 6. He is risen, just as he said. You can't stop Jesus. Here's the forming of a new movement, the Jesus movement, the fellowship of the resurrection, in which umpteen nationalities are represented here as we listen and share in this message. Many different nationalities, many continents here. Well, it began that Sunday. It doesn't look like much to start with. It starts with the loyal remnant. With that little loyal remnant. Two women, well, three women, because it's Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James, and it's Mark who draws attention to a third, Salome. The loyal remnant. And you know, they haven't come to anoint the body of Jesus. Not at all. It's the second group of women who will come for that purpose. All this group have come for is just to look. That's all. Just to be there. Loyalty and love for Jesus pull them back to that place. They can hardly bring themselves to leave the scene on the evening of Good Friday. Just look back to Matthew 27, verse 60 here. And you see that. So Joseph, verse 59, takes the body, wraps it in a clean linen cloth, and places it in his own new tomb. He'd cut out of the rock, rolled a big stone in front of the entrance to the tomb, and went away. Verse 61, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there, opposite the tomb. And that's how Good Friday ends, with the two Marys. And that's how Easter Day starts, with the two Marys. They're the last at the cross, they're the first at the tomb. And theirs is the reward. They're to be the first witnesses of the resurrection, the first tiny instrument inserted into a solid mass of surrounding unbelief, opening up a crack in the prevailing worldview that was holding down a continent that lay in the sleep of death. That little crack was to be widened by other witnesses to prize open a world. The loyal remnant, see, it starts there. Last at the cross, first at the tomb, just to be there, not hoping for very much. And I want to say to friends, therefore, here in church, or to you listening to the recording of this message, if you find yourself in a plodding situation, boring and dull, or frustrating spiritually, maybe in your business where you're the only person who seems to be a believer, or in your family where you're the only one, or where you're finding the going hard, disillusioning, you find yourself beset sometimes by doubt, or wistfulness. I wish it could be better. I wish Jesus meant more to me personally. Don't give up. Hang around. Just stick around, like those women did. They wanted just, let's go back to the tomb. Let's go back there again. Come on, we'll go again. It's the people who hold on and persist who will be rewarded when something sensational and wonderful happens in the church. Too often, when something wonderful does happen in the church, some great highlight, a number of people are not there because they're not regularly there. They come back and they say, did you hear what happened? No. Oh, you should have been there. Why weren't you there? Hang around. Stick around. And you'll be rewarded. And if you're a casual worshipper, let's see if we can't build into our rhythm a weekly worship, where we come to be with Christ's people in this family of the resurrection regularly. And let's join one of these groups that explore Christianity, like the course we shall have in this place. Many times we repeat that course. Many people have found hope through that course. Join it. Here they are. We're coming back. Last at the cross. First at the tomb. Just to be there. Stick around. So it starts with the loyal remnant. Secondly, it continues with a futile resistance. This story of the unstoppable Christ. The chief priests, there they are, in the next section, verse 11 onwards. We who are caught up in the wonder of the resurrected Christ feel like saying to these chief priests, as they now feature in the story, you're still there. The story has moved on. Beyond you. The cat's out of the bag. The message is spreading. The tomb's empty. Jesus has been seen. His disciples are being changed. And you're still there. What are you doing? Aren't you somehow redundant now to the story? And what are they doing? They're fiddling around with feverishly bribing the still shaking guards. Saying, keep your mouth shut. Say no to you. We'll give you some money. A desperate act of damage limitation. Well, they could have saved their money. Always money with these enemies of Christ. Always money. They buy his betrayal with money. Now they attempt a lying cover-up with money. You can't stop Jesus with money. Here's an example of futile resistance. I sometimes hear of the efforts of certain other religions trying to coerce people to their own belief system, or even buying converts with financial and material inducements. That sounds like a very short-term approach. Look at these chief priests. In their short-term contingency measures, it wouldn't be long before they would find themselves coughing in the exhaust of a new movement that had the world in its sights and was leaving them far behind. Which leads us on to the third part of our story today. You can't stop Jesus. His resurrection entourage begins with a loyal remnant. Then the story continues with a futile resistance. Then the unstoppable Christ. This story ends with the appointed regrouping for world mission. You must have noticed it. The reference to Galilee here, twice. Did you see it? So look here at verse 7. As the angel says, he's not here. He has risen just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples he is risen from the dead. And is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I've told you. And then when Jesus himself makes reference to Galilee too, just further on, when he has this marvelous moment of meeting with the women. And in verses 9 and 10, suddenly Jesus met them. Greetings, he said. They came to him, clasped his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me. So what's all this about Galilee? Is it important? Oh yeah, it is. Because that goes back to Matthew 26 and verse 32. At the Last Supper, Jesus warns them, this very night, verse 31, you will all fall away on account of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. He can see it coming. He warns them. You're going to be scattered. But, verse 32, after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee. That's what it's about. Jesus is predicting that there will come a scattering of the little band. Everything is going to come apart. And sure enough, even on this Easter day, here in this story in Matthew 28, there's not the faintest sign of coordination among the disciples. Of the right hand knowing what the left hand is doing, they're all rushing around. Not integrated at all. Not organized. But, says Jesus, there will come a regrouping after I have been raised. And it'll happen not in Jerusalem, but in Galilee, at a mountain rendezvous. And so the next in the study series brings us to that, in verse 16. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. And what's going to happen there? The regrouping, the forming of the resurrection apostolic witness to the world. That's what's going to happen there. And verse 7 then, he is going ahead of you. So Jesus would be the leader always. It's not up to them to try and organize themselves. It's not their mission. It's his. He is in charge of it. It's hopeless when a group of believers get together and say, we're going to now carry this mission right to our city, to different parts of the world, unless they've submitted the whole thing to Jesus Christ. It's he who is to be the leader. It's he who is to be the inspirer. Always, always, he will go ahead of you. So we've learned here about the unstoppable Jesus. This story starts with a loyal remnant. Is that you? Is that us? The loyal remnant. Whatever's happening, we're sticking with him. We're sticking around. We're going to be with him. It continues with a futile resistance. It's no good trying to fight Jesus. If you try and fight him, you'll find yourself always, always on the losing side. Always disillusioned. Always uncertain. Never satisfied. Fighting for your own batteries. The futile resistance. And it ends with the appointed regrouping, which is going to take on, in the end, the world. No one can stop Jesus.